ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Recently, my 4-year-old daughter asked me to make her some unicorn wings. Unicorn wings? I've never made any wings before, I said. But as her face started to cloud, I knew I had to figure something out. In a mild panic, I recycled a colorful gift bag from her birthday and lovingly transformed it into paper unicorn wings. Phew! She loved them until she realized they couldn't make her fly. Hey, Takumbudzi here. Welcome to Earshot and our latest season, The Other Me. In this episode, you'll hear two tales of other people who transform themselves on the outside to discover their true inner selves. Coming up, Gage becomes something else, something animal, when he slips into a furry suit.
Growing up, I've always felt different. It wasn't until I got a little bit older that I realized, actually, there is so many other people who are like me. For instance, myself, I'm a dinosaur.
But before that, let's pull up a stool in the Bearded Tit, a queer neighborhood bar in Sydney. Celine Teoblocki's in the audience, watching her friend Ray up on stage. Ray's a drag king. And if you've never heard of that, imagine the opposite of a drag queen.
Boy is the love child of George and George Michael. He's a heartbreaker, a heartthrob, and a bit of a himbo.
My name is Ray. I'm a 43-year-old non-binary person. I am a TV editor. I'm also a drag king called Boy Michael.
I first met Ray in LA 2 years ago at a Pride event. With their long blonde mullet, almost like a mane, they reminded me of a magical creature, like a unicorn. But tonight, as Boy Michael, Ray's facial features look chiseled with an expertly painted on 5 o'clock shadow. There's still a softness to the way they move on stage though. And with their short blonde undercut, there's an attractive, playful androgyny to Boy Michael. He could be your favorite member of a boy band.
Performing was always really hard. Like, Boy Michael is sassy and he's really confident putting on makeup and becoming somebody else, but he's also me. There is a safety in putting on a costume. Then again, it is an incredibly vulnerable thing to do as well. I think it just is the culmination of all the things that I love, which is pop music, dancing, and performance. That was my sister's favourite pop star growing up. George Michael she was obsessed with him. She had posters all over the wall. And I had Boy George. This beautiful combination of Boy George, who was quite glam and very pretty, but then so is George Michael. I mean, he's so pretty too, but sort of had a more, I guess, masculine edge. The combination of those two things made sense to me.
Ray really developed this persona during a course called Kings of Joy. It's run by a self-proclaimed mother of drag kings.
So I'm Danica Lani. My pronouns are S/HE, but you can refer to me as she. I coach and choreograph and mentor first-time drag kings.
Then you two peel off and then you're coming forward. Renee's coming forward. And it might even be you and Nat coming forward.
It's a Wednesday night in Sydney's Inner West and Danica's running 7 drag kings through their moves. It's to a Will Smith song from the Men in Black soundtrack. So on the night, they'll be wearing suits, dark sunglasses, and possibly prosthetic aliens.
Peel off, then, yeah, good. Can we do it again? Can we do it as a canon?
When you say, I'm a drag king, people's brains often start to melt down right in front of you and can see the cogs turning and going, hang on, I know what a drag queen is, but what is a drag king? A drag king really is anyone who's ready to lean into their masculine, regardless of what gender they were assigned at birth, their sexuality. I always say, I don't care who you sleep with, are you ready to lean into your masculine energy and create a masculine presence on stage as a drag king?
But boobs, they're hard to hide for some of us. So how do you create a masculine look when you've got them?
Binding is a technique that drag kings often use to create a more masculine silhouette of the body. You can wear a binder, which is a compression top. You can even buy types of sports crop tops, or we can use binding tape. These days, people are selling booby tape in Kmart for women who want to hold their breasts up and create that, you know, lift. The drag kings are using that tape to flatten our chests. Pop it all to the side, babes, and then you create an illusion of pecs.
And then there's the issue of what's missing. Packing is when a drag king places something down their pants to create, as Danica puts it, the male bulge. For Ray, performing as Boy Michael has allowed them to play with ideas of what's male and what's female.
I don't always pack. It depends on the outfit. And generally, I find it quite uncomfortable. Sometimes it's to be a little bit more edgy and a little bit more controversial. Like recently I packed, but I didn't tape my chest. I really wanted to lean into a more gender fluid, gender queer look, which felt like really good and really powerful.
Kings of Joy live up to their name. They have a lot of fun.
My name tonight is Chase Cox. C-O-C-K-S. Yeah, and I really like boy bands.
But Danica has two rules that she's strict about.
The first rule is don't do anything racially problematic. Draw on your own cultural heritage. That's mostly for white people, though I can say that as a white person because we get blind to race. The second one is it is one of the core values of Kings of Joy to not do representations of toxic masculinity on stage. I'm talking rape, sexual violence, all the way down to mansplaining. There are a lot of men who are committed to changing those kinds of behaviours for themselves and for their sons. We see and experience enough toxic masculinity in life. Unfortunately, I have seen some drag kings grab the breast of another drag king who hadn't done binding. And while those people might have that agreement, we just don't know that. And so it looks like that kind of toxic masculinity being expressed.
Toxic masculinity came up for Ray earlier this year when they were asked to perform a Priscilla Queen of the Desert tribute as part of Sydney World Pride. At the time, Ray kept an audio diary.
Fuck.
Yesterday we turned up for costumes. They've put us in a blue singlet, a red checkered shirt, a pair of shorts, Blundstones and an Akubra hat. And the only time that anybody is in an outfit that resembles this is the scene where one of the queens is chased down the street by a bunch of Australian blokes and they attempt to rape her.
Ray and the three other kings pushed back. They took it up with the show's producers.
You know, we reiterated that it was perpetuating a negative male stereotype that we weren't going to do. So they said, okay, what are your suggestions? And we all agreed on sexy, rhinestone, glittery camp cowboys. So it's all very tight. We've had to provide our own costumes, but happy. It's been a win for the kings.
Ray prefers to push against outdated narratives in popular culture. And even though they're in their 40s, they look up to younger, genderqueer artists like King Princess. I can taste
your lipstick. My God, when I went to the King Princess concert, I looked around the room and I thought, only these kids could be my children. King Princess is 24. I'm like, I'm old enough to be her mum. I thought to myself, I'd be so fucking proud. I didn't have that growing up. Like, there wasn't any representation really of queer people in film or TV or music. It was very binary. I always like to say if Boy Michael was completely nude, I think he'd be more like a Ken doll, like just with a smooth mound. Probably not even any nipples.
Ray has only come out as non-binary in the last 2.5 years. For a long time, they were in love with their best friend, Matt, and they were married for 10 years. Yeah.
That's me and my dad walking up the aisle. Matt looks so good, that suit. My mum made my dress, being a dressmaker.
We're looking at old wedding photos. Ray pauses and scrunches up their face.
Matt looks great in that. I look funny.
You're not quite smiling.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas he looks very comfortable. He just looks like he's just done a fantastic thing.
Yeah. Kat got the cream.
They were both so happy on their wedding day. But soon after...
I had a few moments of identity crisis and I was like, am I supposed to be like a good wife now? Is this what I do? Like, I remember cleaning our apartment and trying to make it perfect and trying to, you know, be more of like a homemaker or something. And then stopping at one moment and going, why am I doing this? Matt doesn't want me to do this. I don't want to do this. This isn't our relationship. This is not what we're about.
Before Matt, Ray was in a long-term relationship with a woman called Maria. Ray's parents never quite understood or accepted it.
Before I got married, I was like, oh, I'm a lesbian. And then I fell in love with my best friend. I was like, oh, maybe it was just a moment. And then a few years into that, I was like, no, I'm definitely bisexual.
Then, a few years into their marriage, Ray and Matt started to want different things.
I never wanted to carry a child. And I definitely think that has something to do with gender dysphoria.
But it wasn't just the issue of kids. Matt was often on the road as a touring musician, and Ray became more deeply involved with the queer community.
One night, he was like, can you just like, and it really came out of the blue and it really surprised me. He's like, can you just tone it down with like all the queer music that you listen to and all the TV shows that you watch and some of the T-shirts that you wear? I just remember seeing red. I was just like, nah.
I didn't know at the beginning that Ray was coming out as non-binary, but I could see they were going like in this queer journey.
This is Daniele, Ray's friend and confidant. Originally from Milan, Daniele also performs drag around Sydney as Misunderstood.
I'm non-binary, so my pronouns are they, them, and my drag persona, whose name is Misunderstood, reflect my journey with gender and my playfulness. I don't call myself drag queen, I call myself drag queer. I don't wear a wig, I keep my hair, I don't shave my goatee. Now I just tied black because I'm getting old. I like to play with the gender. When people see me as like, is a woman with a beard or a man on a dress? So I make people think.
Daniele's known Ray for almost 10 years. They've done drag shows together. Daniele and their husband Darcy are part of Ray's chosen family now. In fact, Ray refers to Daniele as their chosen mother.
So in the queer world, often we are not lucky to have our biological family. Like, I'm very lucky with my parents and my sister. They're very supportive. They've always been on my side. There's other queer people that the family's been disowned. You know, they don't want to have anything to do with them. So you pick people around you and you create this queer family because they understand you better.
Daniele's own journey to merging their drag identity with their everyday began 5 years ago when their husband encouraged them to dress off stage the way that they do when they're in drag. Since Ray started performing drag, Daniele's noticed that Ray's doing the same thing with boy Michael, blurring the lines between their drag character and themselves.
The way Ray presents now, it's more masculine than it was before, even if I'm still non-binary, but you know, often Ray has a mullet. Extension most of the time, not even real. So all these things are like a bit of a bogan, which is funny because suits them perfectly because they do so well. But I can see how these things trickle from stage in Ray's day-to-day life.
It's been a year now since Ray's divorce and their identity keeps evolving.
Queer people, the landmarks that we have in our life are spread out generally a lot farther apart than folks who follow the heteronormative narrative, which is go to school, get an education, get married, buy a house, have children. There's often like multiple adolescences that happen. So our timelines and landmarks are often delayed or out of order. Yeah, it's a tough thing when you decide not to follow that narrative.
Some days, it can get complicated being gender fluid. But Ray's grateful for the community that's helped them discover their other self.
There's moments where you like catch yourself doing activity or wearing an outfit or engaging with people who know you, and you're like, I feel like I'm at a resting point. And then there are other times where, you know, you get in your head about what you think other people want to see or experience of you, and then you try and perform to that, and then it feels very disconnected. And then there's times where you're like, my God, being gender fluid is like a superpower. And today I'm going to move through all those different feelings with ease, and sometimes you just do.
They are gorgeous, stunning and beautiful. Give it up for Boy Michael!
Creating a celebration that's not just about, hey, this is me on a stage. This is like, hey, this is my gift to you. It's something that we all share.
Celine Teo-Blocky with that story, Becoming Boy Michael. And our sound engineer was Simon Branthwaite. And now, it's a Saturday night in the Adelaide CBD, and the typical weekend crowd is weaving in and out of clubs and drinking halls. But in one corner of the city, a very different crowd has gathered.
All right, Fireball One, DJ Kusaki, let's do this.
On the dance floor, the strobes flash and rainbow stage lights catch the silhouettes of ears, tails, and multicolored fur. People are jam-packed together, dressed as giant animals. At the front of the crowd stands a DJ wearing a grey furry costume head of a giant cat, a puma. Whatever's going on here, it's a bit weird. And producer Nicola van der Wettering is taking us in to find out all about it.
It's very weird. It's a very weird hobby, but being weird isn't necessarily a bad thing. You walk out there, you see everyone smiling and having a great time, so it must be pretty fun being weird.
I'm going in.
Hang on.
That noise you're hearing? It's the sound of me shoving my head into a giant fluffy cat costume.
It probably looks so silly because my body is probably so small.
Furries, also known as the furry community or furry fandom, are a mainstay of weird subculture. I'm not a furry, but as a millennial growing up on the internet, they were a pre-teen obsession of mine. Doom-scrolling forums to gawk at people dressed up in wild and colourful costumes, drawing stares and often ridicule. I simply couldn't wrap my head around how people could be that into something.
A furry is someone who enjoys media and art of anthropomorphic animals.
It's creating characters, whether it be to be someone completely different or be yourself, your true self.
I've come out to suburban Adelaide to visit the DJ from the furry party in the city, Kusaki, and his partner and fellow furry, Mixie.
There she is.
In front of us, in a giant blue IKEA bag, are the elaborate mascot-like fursuits of Kusaki and Mixie's animal characters, a puma and a Swedish elkhound.
My fursuit here has big 3D printed glasses, which match my own glasses, and then big pink ears that are probably add an extra bit of height to him when I wear him.
That's pretty easy, I guess, to put on. I'm just kind of... Yeah, once it's on, it's on.
Here in the stark daylight, there's an odd contrast between the fantastical suits and the pair of young professionals sitting on the couch of their townhouse.
I work full-time as a graphic designer, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday. I'm not going to, you know, tell clients, all that sort of stuff.
For a living, I do mostly digital artwork and 3D models. We met through a group of friends, not furries, but we were in the gothic community.
I wasn't goth at all.
He was not alternative, so yeah, I kind of met the normie through the alternative scene.
I wasn't a normie. Well, compared to everyone there, yeah.
I was furry for years, and I've always been an artist, but he didn't know anything about it at first.
Yeah, I just got really interested in the work she was doing. The fandom has definitely helped me find who I am and accepting myself for who I am.
It's hard to quantify just how big the furry community is, but it's big. One of the main community websites, Fur Affinity, has about 1.6 million active users. And even in little old Australia, some of the larger furry community events attract thousands.
So the furry fandom started in the 70s around America when they were importing different cartoons and animes and stuff, and there was anthropomorphic animations as well. That's kind of where the style slowly started to develop. They kind of just brought all their interests into this media, and they would all create their own characters, and then the fursuit became a thing. This is completely made up by people in their imagination. So a lot of us are very neurodivergent or on the spectrum.
Some people have characters like ours where it's, you know, just us but fluffy. And then you have other people where their characters are a big multicolored dragon and just their own version of what furry is to them.
So to be a furry can be simply an interest in anthropomorphic animals. But by far the most endemic feature of the furry community is the concept of a unique individual character, a furry persona, known as a fursona. The anthropomorphic characters brought to life in art and, more spectacularly, by wearing fursuits.
So at the moment we are seeing a massive barbecue for people all across South Australia coming together for this same furry interest. People make tails, people make headpieces.
This is Gage, one of the furry event organisers in Adelaide.
Growing up, I've always felt different. It wasn't until I got a little bit older that I realised actually there is so many other people who are like me. For instance, myself, I'm a dinosaur. And I've always loved dinosaurs. I've always felt like if I was going to be something, I would be a dinosaur. So I created my character. I joined this lovely community, and I guess I've just been thriving ever since.
From huge furry dragons to sleek cat robots, multicoloured foxes, wolves, sharks, and everything in between. It's fascinating to see the faces under the suits as I talk to people in the crowd.
I gravitated towards a deer mostly because, like, well, I am kind of tall and lanky and trip over things. I kind of feel like a newborn deer half the time.
So my name's Buddy, and my persona is also Buddy. It's just me as a cat. So I would say probably about 75% of us are like queer identifying in some way. And if you were to look back into the 80s, it would probably be the same. To be with such a large group of people who you know won't judge you, or who you know are more likely to just be your friends casually, regardless of who you are. You could go out there and you could make friends with folks from uni, but it's never the same feeling as meeting up with a group of furries and chatting to them.
But not everyone was so enthusiastic about us walking around with a camera and a microphone. More than a few people shied away, dodging us, rubbernecking at the menagerie of fantastical human-sized animals. But one guy in particular stood out to me, a man in his 30s who looked quite out of place.
I'm Tom. I'm 34. I am more of a closet furry than most, generally due to what I do for work and stuff. It doesn't always mesh as well with other society norms.
Tom looks like he'd fit in more with a crowd of tradies at the pub than at a furry event. Imagine my surprise when I learned Tom was another prominent furry event organiser.
Oh, there's a few people who suspect. Well, it's interesting.
Conveniently timed.
Conveniently timed, it's the wife. Hang on, I do actually.
Yeah. Oh, and don't worry. Tom's wife does know he's a furry.
I have small children, so the furry community brings a certain amount of magic to their life as well. A lot of the people who choose to lead this as more of a double life is purely due to certain areas of work might not necessarily accept what you do through a pastime, and people thinking that they're just always dressing up and wasting time and not doing anything with their life, as opposed to the fact that they're actually just out there expressing themselves and trying to enjoy everything that life has to offer.
Furries are not your stereotypical group of misfits. Furries are everywhere, many in totally unsuspecting places. They are hairdressers, train drivers, IT guys, artists, and that's just here in Adelaide. During the pandemic, an American furry named Chise became famous as one of the molecular biologists who developed the Moderna COVID vaccine. But for many, the risk of going public, of being labelled immature or unprofessional, or just plain weird, is too much of a risk.
And it doesn't help that there's been so much history of media portraying it in a bad light. There's so many news articles that where, you know, people are gone, oh, furries are just, you know, sex pests or that sort of thing. But it's just like, oh, okay, this again. There's a lot of furry hate that is just thinly veiled transphobia or homophobia. You know, I think it's a way for people to express themselves and figure out who they are and be more confident in themselves. I have a very complicated, I guess, relationship with my family, not only just on this, on other stuff too. But it's, you know, it's definitely something they don't really understand, and I don't think they ever will. And definitely think that they've been swayed a lot by bad public perception of it. I wasn't extremely happy with it at first, but I've come to accept that they probably won't accept that of me ever. I'm not going to change for them on this because it has brought me so many amazing friendships and amazing people in my life. That
makes you happy.
Yeah, it makes me happy, and I wouldn't change it for the world, so.
Listening to Kisaki talk about his parents, I begin to understand why some of the furries at the event were so nervous about us being there. It doesn't take much Googling to uncover countless articles and videos that deride the entire subculture as a fetish group, or more commonly, assume all furries identify as actual animals. But for me, the contrast between these perceptions, the same ones I saw doom-scrolling as a teenager, and what I saw hanging out with and talking with furries, well, it couldn't be more stark.
I have a 13-year-old daughter who has been a furry for about a year now. She came out to me and said, I want to make a fursuit. I'm like, all right, what's a fursuit? And she showed me, and I'm like, okay, well, you're not paying the thousands of dollars that it takes to buy a fursuit. And I said, if you want to make one, you can make one. I talk about the community with my co-workers and friends and family, and they're all absolutely supportive. Some of the parents that I speak to have been like, oh, yeah, you know, we've heard about fairies, you know, the school's organising a litter box and in the bathrooms and whatnot. It's like, that's more than likely kids reaching out for attention and needing extra support in other areas and using that as an avenue. It's not necessarily something that the community is about. You know, the community is about acceptance and kindness and support. So I think the up-and-coming generation, especially with COVID and things like that, I think that's negatively impacted their ability to have that social interaction, understanding those social cues. So it's had a massive positive impact to her life.
I kind of got the sense that this mum was a little bit like a surrogate mum for all the furries whose mums don't understand them. At the end of the day, after all those teenage years observing through a screen, hanging out with a bunch of furries turned out a little less weird and a little more fun than I'd expected.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, it is weird, but I think it's fun and cool to be weird, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's what's life if you're not a bit weird?
Yeah.
It'd be a bit boring,
yeah.
Don't you think?
It really would be. And who wants to be boring? Me? I'm still not a furry. But I'd be curious to see how I felt dressing up as a white and red scaly dragon.
And if I were a furry,
I'd definitely be a graceful orange and purple giraffe with wings. The Animal Outside was produced by Nicola van der Wettering. Our supervising producer was Kirsty Melville, and the sound engineer was Tom Henry. And this episode was made on the lands of the Gadigal and Kaurna people. I'm Takumbuzi.